In his new book from Harper One called The American Bible, How Our Worlds Unite, Divide, and Define a Nation, Our Words Unite, Divide, and Define a Nation, Stephen Prothero examines the texts and speeches of the American past as a way of understanding what defines the American spirit. There are all of the traditional works you'd expect to find in a discussion like this, the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, the Gettysburg Address, but also the words of figures like Rabbi Abraham Heschel, Mohandas Gandhi, Stephen Moore, Bill McKibben. Stephen Prothero is a professor in Boston University's Department of Religion, a regular contributor to the Wall Street Journal and USA Today, and the author of five other books, and I'm very pleased to welcome him back to our show today. Hello.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, this isn't a religious work, but you have structured it along the lines of the Bible with commentary. Why did you take that approach?
Well, I've always been interested in the intersection of religion and politics. That's really what I've always done in my own writing. And this is an example of a work that's largely about politics, but I'm noticing that there seems to be something religious about the way we conduct our public life, and maybe more specifically something Jewish about it. We have these core texts, and then we argue about them. We have traditions of commentary, and it's the argument that brings us together more than some kind of a common creed.
So you've put things together under the various books of the Old and New Testament.
Right, there's sections like Gospels and Prophets and Law and Epistles, that sort of thing.
And you begin your chapter on Proverbs with Ben Franklin's adage, remember that time is money. Is that a particularly American idea?
Well, you know, it's probably a kind of combination of Calvinism from the old world and the new world, but Franklin really makes it central to the American spirit, really this idea of, you know, hard work, which is part of what we debate whenever we talk about things like welfare or tax policy and that sort of thing.
You have a lot about Ayn Rand in this book. How would she respond to what Franklin said?
I think she would respond more to Coolidge, The Business of America's Business. She's in the book because she gives this wonderful articulation that America is really about freedom, and more particularly it's about economic freedom or capitalism. So long before we heard greed is good in the Wall Street movie, she was saying greed is good in her novel Atlas Shrugged.
Mm-hmm. Atlas Shrugged, The Fountainhead, nonfiction works. She wrote The Virtue of Selfishness. But wouldn't many Americans call selfishness and egoism un-American ideas?
Absolutely, and I think that's one thing that's interesting about these texts is that the way they get in the book, in this sort of unofficial canon that I'm trying to present to American readers, is by creating controversy. They have to have an afterlife. You have to have people on both sides of the question. And we certainly have that even with the Declaration and the Constitution, where some people are going to say, well, the Constitution is primary. Others, like Lincoln, are going to say the Declaration is primary. And with Rand, some are going to say, wow, she's really captured the American spirit. And others are going to say, no, this is absolutely 180 degrees from what America is all about.
Well, she wrote, egoism is virtue and altruism is vice. And there are a lot of Americans who would say that there's a generous American spirit.
Well, there's also a lot of Americans who would say that this is a Christian nation, and Ayn Rand was an atheist. And this is a place where Republicans today who are using her, quoting her as a kind of scripture, are getting into trouble because they're neglecting her atheism, and they sort of want to have it both ways with her. They want the pro-capitalism, but they don't want the anti-Christianity.
That's what happened with Rick Santorum when he suddenly distanced himself. Charles Colson, who was one of the Watergate Seven, when he became religious, he also started criticizing Rand for her materialism. But we're hearing these arguments right now, aren't we, with the Tea Party and other groups in this country who are arguing over whether it's class warfare if the wealthy are criticized for having a lot more than the poor?
That's right. And like the Bible itself, like the Christian and Jewish Bibles, the American Bible is this multivocal text where it tells us that we should value things that are themselves competing, like the classic is liberty and equality, right? If you have a society that is purely free, it's going to be very unequal. If you have a society that's totally equal, it's not going to be very free. So one thing that we do with the afterlives of these texts, by citing them and going back to them, and what would Jefferson do about tax policy? What would Lincoln say about the separation of church and state? Is that we try to sort out these contradictions that we have in our past.
We do language segments on the show, and confusions often arise when we talk about the American version of the English language. And you write about Noah Webster here. He was denounced by his own publisher, wasn't he?
He's probably the most unlikable person in the book, maybe along with Ayn Rand, who a lot of people didn't like, but hardly anybody liked Webster. But he's in here because his blueback speller was really for 100 years the book through which American presidents and ordinary Americans learned how to read. And he gave them not only a language, American English, distinct from British English, but he also gave them a vision of America as this great country where you would learn about your hero, George Washington, even as you learned your ABC. So he's there for this text that some have called our cultural Declaration of Independence.
And we spell things differently because he decided to get rid of some of the British spellings. He spells center, C-E-N-T-E-R, instead of R-E.
Right, and no U in honor. Or glamour or labor, that's right. And part of that was he wanted us to be distinct from Britain, but he also wanted us to be like one another. He wanted us to have a common language and a different language.
So he was actually making some kind of moral point here?
I think it was more an independence point. You know, we fought and we created our political independence from England. Why should we be using the same language as the Brits do?
So then why was he so unpopular? Was he just a disagreeable person?
I think he was a disagreeable person, and there was always he was always looking for a fight, and he was a self-promoter.
My guest is Stephen Prothero. His latest book, The American Bible, How Our Words Unite, Divide, and Define a Nation. You include the lyrics of songs here. Woody Guthrie's song, This Land Is Your Land, Irving Berlin's God Bless America.
Yeah, I think the songs or psalms are definitely part of the way we imagine ourselves. After 9/11, we gravitated as a nation toward God Bless America. We took time out in the middle of Major League Baseball games in the seventh inning stretch to sing this song, to gather together, to forget for maybe just a few months the differences between Republicans and Democrats. And these songs have a kind of binding effect. They're also places where we will argue about who we are. The Star-Spangled Banner, some have said, shouldn't be our national anthem, not just because it's so hard to sing, but because it's a militaristic song. It's about a war, the War of 1812, and it's about fighting against Britain. Why do we want to have a national anthem where we're fighting against Britain? And so they've tried to push us towards some of these other texts like God Bless America, which is now, you know, the mantra you have to say at the end of a presidential speech to know that it's over.
Although some people would object because of the use of the word God. We have that debate as well.
Right, and that's the problem with the Declaration, I'm sorry, with the Pledge of Allegiance, where we added under God, and it's a problem with God Bless America. So if you want to have a broader sense of America that goes beyond our Judeo-Christian heritage, then both those texts become problematic.
In the case of Woody Guthrie, he was accused of being a communist. I don't know if he was ever an actual member of the party, and that was a way of kind of diminishing the impact of that song.
I think he said once, the only thing read about me is my bank account. he denied that he was a communist. But interestingly, This Land Is Your Land, which we do tend to think of now in part because it was picked up by the counterculture of the 60s and 70s as a kind of an anthem, we tend to think of it as left, but it's actually been used a number of times in Republican national convention meetings. So it is seen as a bipartisan text, or at least it has been.
Well, in earlier versions, there were verses about private property and land ownership, and they've kind of been excised.
Yeah, for that one, you know, often these texts will go left or right depending on how they're interpreted. But this is a case where we have different versions of the same text. So if you forget the versions about, there was a trespassing sign and it said, you know, don't go here. But I looked at the back of the sign and I walked right through, Woody Guthrie says, you know, or he's talking about people in soup lining up for food from soup kitchens, things like that. Those are the verses that really attract people on the progressive side of American politics.
I was surprised to see Maya Lin's Vietnam Veterans Memorial listed in this book, but you describe it as a text of sorts. Well, it's a lot of names.
I was surprised to see it, too. It wasn't in my book originally, and I talked about it with some friends, and one suggested that I include it, and it just didn't seem to me to fit alongside things like Jefferson's first inaugural address or the farewell address of George Washington. But it created a storm of controversy. And Maya Lin did see it as a book of two open pages of black reflective granite with these words of 58,000-plus dead American servicemen. And it's those words that we engage as we go to that memorial.
And there were many people who felt that we should have something more traditional, a statue of a fallen soldier or something like that. And an additional statue and flag were added to her memorial wall against her objections.
Yeah, so much a part of this book isn't these texts themselves, but the controversies that follow them. And that controversy was fascinating. You know, the memorial is memorial should be white instead of black. Memorial should be heroic instead of provocative. And she said, look, we're never going to agree about the Vietnam Memorial. We're all going to go there, and we're never going to agree about the war. So let's go there and hash it out each in our own way. And I think that's the genius of that particular book in the American Bible.
You say that more than any other text included in your book, the autobiography of Malcolm X speaks its own language. Although we have learned since that it probably not everything in it should be trusted.
Well, Alex Haley had a big part in compiling that book, but the reason I say it speaks in its own voice is that it actually doesn't refer back that much to these other great texts. If you look at someone like Martin Luther King with his I Have a Dream speech or his letter from Birmingham Jail especially, there's all these references back to all these figures in the book, to Jefferson and Washington. But with Malcolm X, he has this sort of sui generis, out of his own brain kind of argument that he's making that certainly draws on Islam. But it doesn't so often say, look, America is great and we're not keeping up with the greatness of America. That's often the argument we see with King, and X has a different argument.
Mario from Manhattan has written in to ask what we mean by the word materialism. Is it used as the opposite of spiritualism or just a synonym for consumerism?
Well, of course it means both, but in the terms of the debate with Ayn Rand, it refers to a kind of Marxist materialism, although she was anti-Marxist, but the idea that she picks up from Marx, that the world is really to be understood purely on a material basis, that we really don't have a god or deities or angels or anything to worry about. And so we should each pursue our own happiness for ourselves and not rely on the church to do that for us.
Should we be surprised that a novel like The Fountainhead has become such a central philosophical point for so many people in politics? I mean, Alan Greenspan for a long time cited it as his main inspiration.
Well, the novel by Rand that I include in the book isn't The Fountainhead. It's actually Atlas Shrugged. But Greenspan did write in after a blistering review in the New York Times in 1957 of Atlas Shrugged that really talked about this as this horribly adolescent and ridiculous book. He wrote in,
it is rather clumsily written.
Well, I think it is, but it is written with a kind of fervor that we often don't see. And Greenspan wrote into the New York Times in a letter defending the book. And the commentaries in My American Bible include the voices of ordinary Americans as well in letters to the editor and other sorts of pieces where we can hear, you know, we the people also engaging in this alongside the presidents that are in the cortex of the book.
Now, you have chosen certain texts. You could have chosen a lot of other ones from newspapers and such editorials, because in the end, part of what has led us to see ourselves the way we are has been influenced to a large degree by what some people have said, then people have repeated, and the conversation is still going on.
That's right, and that's what I find so fascinating about this, is that you could take a text like the Declaration of Independence, and when it's first written, it's just seen as an argument for why we're separating from England, and they're not really thinking about the equality proposition. And then we go to Lincoln and his Gettysburg Address, and he says, wait a minute, the nation was founded on the proposition of equality, which would have surprised most of the founders.
And we can look at the Constitution, and William Douglas will have a very different take on it than Samuel Alito.
That's right. And so we have, in the same way we have this conversation about the Constitution, we have it about all these books in the American Bible.
Stephen Prothero, his book, The American Bible, How Words Unite, Divide, and Define a Nation, is published by Harper One. Thank you so much for being with us again.
Thank you.